Welcome to the first season of Ancient Anecdotes, powered by Listen Cub. This is your host, Ramanathan Iyer.
And this is Lalita Ramanathan.
Hey, Papa. Why are you crying? What happened?
Amma scolded me badly, Pa.
Why? What happened? What did you do?
Appa, I came to you to get a hug. What do you mean, what did I do? You're supposed to support me, you know. You're always taking Amma's side.
Papa, abdiyala illada. Come, take cow hug. I'll hug you.
Cow hug you,
feeling better? Now tell me, what happened?
I wanted to wear leggings and go out to play, Pa.
Which one?
The blue one.
Okay. And on top?
The light pink and grey frock.
Hey, thief fellow. That frock we bought in Chennai when the dinosaurs were still roaming the earth. We bought that frock when you were 6 years old.
You said leggings only with frocks and kurtas. It still fits me fine, Pa.
Listen, Pa. That blue legging is a fitting one. And this frock looks like a tight t-shirt at best. It barely reaches your hips. That's why Amma might have scolded you. She just wants you to wear comfortable fitting clothes. That's all. Did you argue with her?
Yes, Pa. I talked back to her. Okay, fine. But she can tell me nicely also, no?
Papa, you should only become the understanding mother today. See, Amma is having her special days, no? You should take extra care of her. Do you think she likes to scold you? I am sure she is also feeling bad that she had to scold our darling baby.
Is it? Oh God, I missed this completely. Appa, I'm so sorry. Let me go and apologize to her and give her the cow. It will make her feel better. So that's why she's feeling down.
Go. Kiss and make up.
Appa. Didn't her special days get over only recently?
Yes, it did. But that was for like last month.
Yes. You told me this happens every month.
When you become 13 or 14 years, you will also have your special days, Kuti. You should also take it easy on those days. Run a little less, be like a monkey a little less, and take it easy a little more.
And will I also scold everyone? How I wish I was a boy, Pa.
Why, Pa? You're the morning sunshine for me and your Amma, no? We love you the way you are. You should also love the way you are, the way God has created you.
No, Pa. Look at Shriyansh.
What about him?
See, he doesn't have special days, no?
No.
Because he's not a girl, like me. He can run all over the place, 365 days a year, without any problems. No special days for him. This won't happen now, and won't happen ever.
That's true. But...
But what? Look what will happen to me. Soon I will turn 13 and I will have special days where I have to take it easy.
No, but wait.
And he can wear literally anything. The other day, he came to the park wearing just his vests and shorts. That was truly that. Short.
Papa, listen, Ma.
And I can't wear my favorite frock because it's so small.
Papa.
And the legging is too fitting. What? Why are you smiling?
See, you know something. Boys also have their special days. Only thing, it doesn't happen like it happens for girls. And it happens in a different way.
You mean boys also have to take it easy on 5 specific days?
Well, not in the same way girls have to. And it's not physically tough as it is for girls. But boys also go through changes when they attain what is called as puberty. Say?
Puberty. Appa, why is it tougher for girls?
Well, because they are the only ones who have the strength to bear such pain. And there is nothing wrong with this happening. It is not a defect or anything. It's just that Mother Nature is getting girls ready for carrying babies in the future.
Okay, but why only for girls?
That's what, Papa. That's because girls are stronger and more mature and more intelligent and more caring and morally responsible as compared to boys. Now, what are you thinking?
Appa, you're a boy.
Yes, hooray.
And you're also intelligent and strong also.
Yeah, thank you. But your mom is the stronger of the both of us. Did you know that? You know, even if she's in her special days, does she ask you to have your food from outside?
No, Pa. She ensures I get my food in the morning. Wow, my Amma is a brave Amma.
Yes, she is. But this is nothing new. Even in the Skanda Puranam, although Devas, who were basically boys, were strong and used celestial weapons and everything, they actually called out to celestial cows, who are girls, or Goloka Devatas, when it was time to make these weapons. It was only women who were the reason the men had weapons in the first place. It was a tiresome work which even the Devas were unable to do. So, only after all the tough work was done by these girls, Vishwakarman, the architect of the engineers, was called in to craft the weapons. See, according to Vyasa, women are really the stronger part of the creation. Come, sit down. I need to tell you the story.
Ooh, good story time.
In the ancient pages of the Skanda Puranam, there came a time in the Satya Yuga when the Indradi Devas had stood on the side of their preceptor, Guru Brihaspati, in order to counter Chandra's claim over Tara.
Appa, wait. Chandra claimed Tara, but Tara was Brihaspati's wife, no?
Yeah. And you know what Chandra did? Chandra kidnapped Tara. And when Brihaspati asked Chandra to return Tara back to him, Chandra, who was actually a Deva, refused. And he went to the Asuras seeking the help of their guru, the Bhargava Shukracharya. A belligerent battle seemed to be about to start on Jambudvipa in the mortal realm. But because of the timely intervention of Pitamaha Brahma, the battle was averted and Tara was returned to Brihaspati. It was during this time that the Devas were tired from the stress of constantly drawing their weapons for battle. When they realized that they had to fight with their own kin, the possibility stressed them out so badly. And finally, the Devas were actually relieved that the war didn't break out. Although the Devas were conversant with the use of celestial weapons in countless battles, this time the Devas were suddenly feeling bogged down by the weight of all their weapons. Find this familiar? Fighting with our own family, stressful, becoming tired, wanting a cow.
Don't remind me, Pa.
Anyhow, as the Devas were flying over the Dakshina Parshva, or the southern quarters, the Devas chanced to see the hermitage of the eminent sage Dadhichi, the beautiful ashrama at Manikshira. Oh, what a wonder it was to behold! It looked like Swarga itself, bedecked with natural wonders like various trees and mountains and valleys and flowers. The place rivaled such natural wonders only present in Swarga. The air was rich with the fragrance from various flowering plants like Ketaki, Kutaja and Bakula.
Pura deva sure yuddhe nivritte somakaranat pitamahasya vachanat taram chandra samarpayat tato yata sura swargam Pashyanto adho mukha mahim dadhrushuste tato deva bhumyam svargam aviparam ashramam muni mukhyasya dadhicher loka vishrutam sarvattu kusumopetam padapaurupashobhitam ketakikutajyodbhutam bakula modamoditam evanvidham sama sadya tadashramapadam guru कौतुकद्रष्टुमारब्धः सर्वे देवा मनोरमम् ते च तीर्थाश्रमे तस्मिन् यानान्युत्सृज्य संयतः प्रवृत्तिस्तं ऋषिं द्रष्टुं प्रकृतपुरुष यथा.
द वेनरबल् सेज् दधीचि welcomed the devas kindly. He looked blemishless in the face of his grand austerities and had the countenance of Pitamaha Brahma himself. As they basked in the radiant aura of the virtuous sage, the devas wished to spend some time there in the form of common men and relieve their stress. At the end of a fruitful stay, Indra was ready to take his weapons and return with his retinue to Amaravati. But the sight of the weapons gave him the shivers again. Eager to retain his calm state of mind, Indra requested sage Dadhichi to watch over their weapons when he returned to Amaravati. When the next time we are to meet enemies in battle, we will come for these weapons, O virtuous sage, said Kshatra. And sage Dadhichi agreed. 100 years passed on earth. Sage Dadhichi felt that it was now time to proceed to the northern quarters and continue his austerities to Lord Shiva under the comforting embrace of the pious Himavan. As the sage's retinue prepared to move out of Manikshira, the sage's divine ashrama from the southern quarters, sage Dadhichi was helped by some Rishikanyas. One such kanya was called as Devi Subhadra. Sage Dadhichi said, Subhadra, bring forth all the weapons that the devas have left behind. We must carry them to the Uttaraparshva. Subhadra went to where the weapons were kept. But try as she might, it proved futile for her to even lift them. Sage Dadhichi thought for a while and checked his almanac. Picking the right muhurtam or the point in time during the day, Sage Dadhichi immersed the weapons in some water. While the weapons soaked in water, he sat still for a period of 1/30th of a day or 48 minutes. At the end of this time, he drained out the water which soaked these weapons and emptied them into a container. Then he consumed the water. Along with the water, all the intrinsic power of the weapons assimilated into the sage. As the kanya watched in marvel and awe, the rishi said, Come, my children, you can now leave the weapons here. Let us make haste to the northern quarters. On the way to the northern quarters, Subhadra gave birth to a son amidst a grove of Ashwatha trees. Because of this, he named her son Pippalada. From a very young age, Pippalada inherited sage Dadhichi's illustrious spiritual intelligence and his rigor for doing penances.
Appa, what did Pippalada inherit from his mother Subhadra?
Oh, he inherits Subhadra's anger.
Angara, Appa, the story has not told anything that might indicate that Subhadra is an angry lady, isn't it?
Very observant, Papa. We will see in another story about Subhadra's latent anger and how Pippalada also inherits this tendency, okay? Now let's go on. The sage reaches the bank of the Chandrabhaga River in the northern quarters and sets up his ashrama there. Meanwhile, a lot happens in Swarga. Indra disrespects Brihaspati in Amaravati and Brihaspati leaves Indraloka. In Brihaspati's absence, Indra appoints Tvashta's son, the three-headed sage Vishwarupa, as the guru of the devas, But because Indra kills Vishwarupa, Tvashta creates a divine being called as Vritra, who will be the bane of Indra. Vritra is a powerful asura who quashes the very celestial defense at Amaravati with a single blow. Under Lord Narayana's able counsel, the Indra and the Devas rushed back to Rishi Dadhichi for their weapons. O great sage, the asuras with Vritra at their helm are wreaking havoc upon us. Under Lord Narayana's counsel, we have come for our miraculous weapons. We implore you to return our weapons so we can defend Amaravati.
Atrantare sarvadeva lokapala mahabalaha astranam karanarthaya munairashramamagataha vachatam munim shakro nyaso yastava suvrataha dattosmabhistu shastranam
Dadhichi looked crestfallen. Alas, O mighty Shakra, I am unable to give the weapons as I have not brought them here. I have taken all of their fighting power and skill, O Vasava, the destroyer of enemies, and put it all in water, and then assimilated their power into my very bones. Therefore, O Shatakratu, if you need the weapons, you will have to take my bones. Indra was shaken. O peerless sage, for the sake of the welfare of the world, Rudra had parted with a tenth of his radiance in order to ordain the Devas with the miraculous weapons. Without those weapons, we won't be able to defend our realm against the Daityas and the Danavas who attack us, he said. The sage, deeply immersed in contemplation, turned his gaze towards Shatra, the lord of the Devas, who stood before him. With a serene demeanor, the sage began, I shall propose an alternate path, one that might lead us to our desired outcome. Behold these bones before you, transformed by eons of austerities. Take them and craft from them an array of diverse tools, each in varying sizes and shapes. Through this transformation into weapons, these bones may aid you in your forthcoming battle with Vritra. Shatra, the king of the Devas, listened intently, his brow furrowing with concern. He responded, O noble sage, I am bound by an oath that prevents me from taking your life, even if it is your wish. I cannot partake of your bones while you yet draw breath. I am presented with a quandary. How to utilize your bones in our defense without causing you harm? Please, in your wisdom, guide us on the path to resolve this dilemma.
Eva mukte muniprahatam chakram puratastitam Tatprapyartham upayam tu kathayami tavaparam Yanyetani mamasthani yuyam taistani sarvashah Nirmapayatvam shastrani Tada karani sarvashah yetani tat samutthani eshamapyadhikam balam sadhayishyate bhavatam sangrame yanamamehitam Tamuvachattatashakro Dadhichim tapasonidhim Pranaharam prakatam te Naham shakto yamichasi నచామృతస్య తే అస్థని గ్రహీతుం శక్తి రస్తినః తస్మాత్ సర్వం సమాలోచ్య యత్ కర్తవ్యం తదుచ్యతం ఏవముక్తో మునిప్రాహ ఏతదేవ కళేవరం త్యాజామి స్వయమేవహం దేవకార్యార్థసిద్ధయే అధ్రువం సర్వదుఃఖనామాశ్రయం సుజుగుప్సితం యదా హ్యేత్తదా యుక్తః పరిత్యాగో అస్య సంప్రతం.
The sage, revered for his profound knowledge and asceticism, replied, "In my pursuit of truth and liberation, I shall voluntarily shed this mortal vessel to fathom the mysteries of the cosmos. For this body, the source of suffering, is transient, unstable, and the root of all worldly pain. By casting it aside, I shall transcend the cycle of birth and death, sparing myself the tribulations of this mortal realm. Such is the way, my dear ones."
Appa, where is the sage's wife? Didn't she stop him?
She didn't. She dared not. Devi Subhadra watched all of this happening from a distance, and tears were welling up in her eyes as she clasped her baby closer to her chest. Sage Dadhichi's eyes looked as calm as a rock, and yet his very being seemed ablaze with the power of his wisdom. His words hung in the air, carrying the weight of transcendence and detachment. He continued, "The attachments to worldly relations, be it wife, sister, or daughter, are but fleeting illusions shaped by individual actions. In truth, this corporeal form shall be discarded by all eventually. Thus, my voluntary renunciation should be celebrated and not mourned."
Asya tyagena me dukkham samsarottamana jayate yasmat janamantare jato మృతోపి భవేత్ పునః భార్యా భగినీ దుహితా స్వకర్మ ఫలయోజనా జాతా తేనైవ సంసారే రతికార్యే జుగుప్సితా యస్మాత్ చ స్వయమే వైతద్ వపుస్త్యజతి వై ధ్రువం తస్మాదస్య పరిత్యాగో వరకార్యో అచరిత స్వయం ఏవో పురందరస్యాగ్రే సంకీర్త్య స మహామునిః దధీచిః ప్రాణసంహారం కృతవం సత్వరం తదా.
Having delivered these profound truths, the sage, known for his unwavering commitment to enlightenment, swiftly proceeded to relinquish his earthly existence. The sage used his knowledge to conquer his prana and proceeded to swarga. His act of self-sacrifice left Indra in tears as he gathered the sage's lifeless body in a helpless embrace. As the sage's life force departed, the devas were confronted with the daunting task of separating the flesh and blood from Dadhichi's valuable bones. It was a task both macabre and essential to harness the full potential of the sage's offering. After a moment of contemplation, the devas reached a consensus. "Let us ask the celestial cows of Goloka to help us purify these bones for the sake of weapon making." Shatra made an incantation to the Goloka and invoked Nanda. Nanda, accompanied by her ethereal companion cow mothers, Subhadra, Surabhi, Sushila, Sumana, descended from the heavenly abode to assist in the sacred endeavor. Their presence radiated an aura of celestial grace. Amidst the sanctified ambience, the Devas directed Nanda and her celestial entourage to commence their sacred work. Shatra instructed, "Breathe deeply and begin the cleansing process. May these bones be purged of all impurities and contaminants. Make them whole, pristine, and bereft of any substance that might hinder their divine purpose." With humility in their hearts, they pledged their unwavering commitment to their cosmic duty. Nanda, her voice as melodious as the celestial hymns, addressed the Devas, "However grim and unenviable the labor, we shall carry it out with unwavering commitment and purity of intention. We shall willingly undertake any task that aligns with our sacred duty." With a solemn determination, Nanda and her celestial companions embarked on the task entrusted to them. The cow mothers toiled tirelessly as their mouths bled from their labor. Finally, as the cow mothers completed their arduous task, Lord Brahma, the progenitor of the cosmos, appeared in his full glory to embrace the cow mothers for their brave act. "There, there, my dearest Gomatras, you have completed a task which no one could have dreamt of even starting out. Why? Why do you cry? You should feel happy."
"We feel depleted and dirty, O Pitamaha,"
said the cow mothers amidst tears. Lord Brahma, in his infinite wisdom, sought to cleanse their impurities. He gently touched the celestial cows, consecrating them again. A mild auriferous glow followed Lord Brahma's caress and attached itself to the celestial cows. Soon they radiated with such splendor. The Devas bore witness to the transformative power of Brahma's divine touch as the celestial bovines were rendered immaculate again. Lord Brahma blessed the Surabhis and vanished. However, there remained one aspect still untouched by Brahma's caress, the mouth of the cows. In their quest for total purity, the celestial cows known as Surabhis implored Lord Brahma to address this last vestige of their impurity. However, the heavens remained silent and bereft of Lord Brahma's response. At that time, Devi Saraswati was still in her teen years. She had not yet transformed into the goddess of knowledge yet. She had a sudden lapse of awareness. She spoke in a scathing tone,
"These Gomatras must have fallen from the stature. The revered Surabhis must have committed a great transgression. That is why Pitamaha has spared their mouths from purification. It is a blemish on their purity."
Deva Shukuhu Yadetadishanatyaktam Swayameva Kalevaram Etanmanasadi Nirmuktam Kritya-masti-panjaram Tat-kritva-garhitam karma Deva-deshat-sudarunam Puna-pitamaham drashtum Gata-astaha-surasattamah Tatastudarunam karma yachata bhiranushtitam pitamahasya tat sarvam samachakyur yathatama tachritva vibhudhana sarva samahuya pitamahah sarvagatreshva sap Prashyata Surabhihi శుద్ధికామం శుద్ధికామ్యయ తస్తు తైర విబుధై స్పృష్టః సుపూతా సమావస్థితః ముఖమేకం పరోదాసం నస్పృష్టమశుచి స్మృతం అపవిత్రం భవేత్తాసం ముఖమేకం జుగుప్సితం శేషశరీరం సర్వాసం విశిష్టం తు సురైకృతం.
Just as the words escaped her mouth, Devi Saraswati realized her blunder. The celestial cows, however, could not bear the weight of this accusation. In response to Saraswati's words, they cast a sorrowful gaze upon her and uttered a curse.
With this description of our mouths as being impure, your words have scorched our hearts deeply. Hence, you shall also carry a similar responsibility willingly. You will not be able to escape either from its scorching heat or its painful burden. You will now become a river, and you shall flow for miles and miles with embers of such a burning responsibility. What responsibility is this, Pa?
We will see soon, but does this part seem familiar, Papa? When one loses awareness, that is when one talks back rudely.
I see it now, Pa. I'm sorry I spoke back to Amma.
Don't worry. You're going to make it up with a big hug to Amma, no? Don't worry. Now listen on. Devi Saraswati realized her lapse in awareness and cried out.
My dear sisters, no, please. Please forgive my insolence. I spoke without awareness.
Said Devi Sharada, running towards the Surabhis. But the Gomatras huddled together, their sad cries drowning in a resounding crack of thunder and a blinding ethereal light. They vanished. What was done was done. With the weight of their divine decree, the Gomatras departed for Goloka, leaving Devi Saraswati to reckon with the consequences of her words. Lord Vedavyasa says, this is the point where Devi Saraswati is said to have attained puberty. The Devas found themselves short of time to console Saraswati as one of the guards of Amaravati materialized in front of the Devas.
Oh lords, I bear ill tidings. Vritra leads an elephantine army of asuras and has left for Swarga. He will arrive at the gates of Amaravati in 3 days.
Indra invoked the divine architect Vishwakarman immediately for the forging of the gallant weapons from sage Dadhichi's sanctified bones. Vishwakarman, upon receiving the divine mandate, embarked on the creation of these celestial armaments. With meticulous precision, he fashioned the vajra for Indra from Dadhichi's backbone. He proceeded to craft the shakti for Vahni, the fire god, the danda for Yama, the sword for Niriti, and the noose for Prachetasa or Varuna. Each weapon was crafted to perfection, bearing the indomitable power required for the impending battle. Vishwakarman's skilled hands were unstoppable as he industriously forged additional celestial implements with the remaining bones. The dhwaja or the flagstaff for Lord Vayu, the gadha or the mace for Kubera, and the Shula for Ishana, which is another name for Lord Shiva. He utilized every bit of the formidable austerities and the merit-filled bones of the past sage in the most adroit manner and armed every Deva with a weapon beyond compare. Sparks from the implements rose into the skies as they portended the cosmic conflict that loomed large in the horizon. Wiping the sweat off his brow, Vishwakarman stood up and slowly stretched himself. There was finally a sense of huge relief that washed across the celestial engineer's face.
the Devas came to his side and embraced him affectionately and restored his energies.
They grouped together and in one final blinding flash departed to Amaravati from the banks of the Chandrabhaga River. At the end of the second day, as the time for Vritra's arrival at Amaravati drew closer and closer, armed with these miraculous weapons, the Devas materialized at the gates of Amaravati to confront the Daityas and the Danavas. The war with Vritra's army was only possible because of Dadhichi's solemn sacrifice to part with his bones. But without the Gomatris, the weapons could have never been even made by Vishwakarman. There were literally no volunteers for this important cleansing of the sage's bones. This process causes the important transformation from the bones into the weapons, and no one was ready to do this dirty work. But the Gomatris depict how, for helping the greater purpose, most women have the maturity and courage to do what is needed even if it renders them depleted and dirty. This is the main lesson. The key point is that although both men and women are created equal, women are made much stronger in certain aspects. This is why they are entrusted with the task of bearing children. It is not a small responsibility. Most men can't even begin to think about the effort and pain women have to go through for a certain period of time preparing for this responsibility. These preparatory days are what are the special days that girls go through. And you know what? As human beings or as any other mammal, the only time when girls actually feel vulnerable and weak is when they are in their special days. But it is important to note that girls can handle these days very easily, and that is why they are made this way. Did you understand all of this?
Yes, Pa. Girls are so awesome.
Good job.
Appa, you told at the beginning that the sage was a blemishless and pure individual with aeons of austerities to his credit. Why should his bones be cleaned? Why can't we directly make weapons from the bones?
Oh, that is such a valuable question, Papa. I am so glad you asked it. There are three crucial symbolisms in this story.
Whoa, so many. Tell.
The first one is the most significant. Although you have done the greatest penances and the best service, once our prana leaves us, we are no longer even called by our names. We become a body. Our current state only gives grief to others. We only leave behind the good deeds that we have done in our lives, the service and the pursuit of knowledge, and the love that we have shared in our life with everyone. Granddad used to say that our death makes people cry and lose their balance and peace. It renders them into what is called ashaucha. The invoking of the bovine symbolizes the advent of spiritual knowledge. Cows symbolize jnanam or knowledge. Hence, the cows were asked to clean the bones. Did you also notice another thing, Papa?
What, Pa?
Look at the way Indra asked the Gomatris to start their work of cleansing. Before the cows began, Indra said, "Take a breath and start your work."
Yes, I remember.
There is a reason he says that. Before we start any arduous work, along with positive energy, we require both awareness and a rested mind. This is exactly what mindful breathing gives you. This is why the application of knowledge has always been associated with breathing and pranayama in our culture. Did you get that?
Whoa! So cows symbolize knowledge? Awesome, Pa! Go on.
The second symbolism comes when the energy of the missiles are soaked in water and are then assimilated by the bones of the sage Dadhichi. Weapons used to fight are heavy and unliftable. Water represents love and belonging. When soaked with water, the power of the weapons can be used for good. The knife can cut vegetables for a meal and can also hurt the people who oppose it or the people who even wield it. So, using one's energy for good makes the energy meaningful. This is the second symbolism. Did you get that?
Fantastic, Pa. Knowledge is to be used for good. What's the third one, Pa?
The third symbolism is the best one. I saved the best for the last, you see. Have you wondered why the already pure Gomatris are feeling depleted and dirty after the cleaning of the sage's bones and had to be rendered pure again by the Pitamaha?
Yes, Pa. I was wondering about this a lot. Why did Brahma materialize to re-cleanse the cows?
When we apply knowledge to ourselves to make us clean, a section of the knowledge becomes a reason for us to feel proud and boastful. When we are boastful, we use our mouth to show off, isn't it? One of the sutras that Shiva tells Parvati in the Shiva Sutras is Jnanam Bandha. Knowledge brings bondage. The Gomatris felt proud that they were chosen and then felt humble that they were able to complete the job. They were devoted and surrendered the merit of their actions to Pitamaha Brahma. They were hence rendered pure. By this virtue, even their mouths were made pure. But Saraswati was young and didn't observe the spiritual maturity of the Goloka Matris. That is the reason the cows ordained that Saraswati will also carry her responsibilities even though the labor is hard and tough. When our clothes are dirty, we use a detergent to clean them. But then we use water to remove the detergent as well, isn't it? Otherwise, the cleansing process is not complete. Knowledge is like a detergent. And surrender and humility are like the water that is used after the detergent to remove the detergent as well.
Oh, that is why Brahma did not come when the Gomatras asked him to take care of their mouths. The cows thought their mouths were not clean, but Brahma Pitamaha knew that they were already clean.
Correct.
Is the story over, Pa?
Yes, the story ends here. But the learning from the story is really profound, don't you think?
Huh? What? Why is the story stopping here? What about Devi Saraswati and the war with Vritra?
Hey, thief fellow. That Vritra story I have told you like 10,000 times. But you're right. This Devi Saraswati story is a significant one. What really happens after the Surabhis predict her future is something worth listening to.
Yeah, yeah. Tell that story then. And then, how about the correlation of Devi Saraswati's story with puberty, Pa?
Hear it first.
Oh no, not again.
Hear it first on
Ancient Anecdotes.
On your favorite podcast streaming providers.
Tune in every week for a brand new episode.